Next matter, we have file number A190348. And you can be seated. Thank you, counsel. And I understand that we have multiple counsel. Perhaps as counsel respondents, I believe you had identified a time delineation between counsel. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You want to state that for us again?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Jeff Bowen on behalf of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. We'll be utilizing 10 minutes of the time, and Minnesota Power will utilize the remaining five.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And we have two counsel for appellant, but I'm assuming, is it one counsel that will be presenting?
Your Honor, yes, it is. Andrew Moraska on behalf from the Bill Reeves Law Firm on behalf of Relator Large Power Interveners, my partner in law, Mark Dahl.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning,
we'll just ask counsel, perhaps once again, when you get to the microphone, so you're close to the microphone, identify yourself as you begin. Of course, appellant will have 15 minutes, respondent 15 as divided as noted, and then a 5-minute rebuttal. And if counsel are ready to proceed, you may.
Good morning again. May it please the court. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission made an all-important concession during briefing, which effectively resolves this appeal in favor of Relator Large Power Interveners, or LPI. To be sure, the commission conceded it modified its March 12th initial order in the rate case via the November 28th revised interim rate refund plan order. And in making this modification in the revised interim rate refund plan order, the only order subject to appeal here, the commission exceeded its authority in two fundamental ways, procedurally and substantively. Issues 1 and 4, the procedural issues, were briefed definitively by LPI. I'm therefore going to focus my time today on issues 2 and 3, which are the substantive issues, and LPI respectfully asserts must be addressed by this court because the substantive issues exist independently from the procedural issues. In other words, the commission cannot cure the procedural violations of state law and maintain the relief suggested in the revised interim rate refund plan order without violating the substantive law.
So I want to make sure I understand which issues you are thinking are 2 and 3, and as I have it, it's no retroactive rate making.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And 3 would be the revised refund order does not violate EITE.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
These substantive violations of Minnesota law are reviewed de novo. And unlike the prior appeal in A18-1029, this appeal does not involve the commission's choice of the docket in which to prospectively account for EITE revenues. The fundamental issue on this appeal is whether the commission can lawfully and retroactively modify interim rates after Minnesota Power accounted for the ID sales revenue in the rate case docket, commission consistent with the commission's own orders. So starting with issue 2.
Can I just clarify, Mr. Caldicott, does that presuppose that the second order is an improper order under the law that you were referencing such that that makes the retroactive? In other words, we got two orders that we're dealing with. Are you referring to the fact that there should not have been the change under the statutory violation as you identified, hence that's what makes the retroactive with the change?
Your Honor, just to make sure we're clear, we, the large power interveners, supported the March 12, 2018 initial order. The commission's order in November 28th, the revised interim rate refund plan order, we assert violated procedural and substantive issues of law, and that is the order that we're appealing. Even though that there is some history in the March 12th order, the order under appeal is a November 28th order.
And that thank you for that clarification. I understand respondent's point being is that there was the two together makes the order that there was an open, and that's the comment period that they're referencing. So the retroactivity occurs because of the appealed order changes that calculation, the income calculation.
And, Your Honor, just to make sure that I cover off this point, the second order isn't a combination and interpretation of the first order. Okay, there were two issues in the first order. The first that dealt with EITE, and this is set forth on in the initial order, I believe, starting on addendum page 87. Okay, so there was one issue which dealt with how to account for KeyTac revenue, ID revenue, for setting final rates prospectively, and that does start on addendum page 87. The dispute on the legality of that decision was what was addressed in the appeal A18-1029.
Separate. That's the court's order from, or opinion from May.
Correct, Your Honor. Now, separate from that decision, which is really the language that the commission and the attorney general were saying, hey, that's the important aspect of the decision. No, actually, the important aspect of the decision was an entirely separate issue, which was the interim rate refund. And if we look at addendum page 90, on this separate issue, the commission specifically defined that issue as whether or not it could modify the interim rate refund to ID paying customers, that is those customers that are required to pay for the EITE surcharge under the ID statute, whether they could modify that their interim rate refund to offset the costs that were in existence in Minnesota Power's ID tracker. That was the issue, and the commission undeniably said, yes, in fact, we are going to set up this test. The commission said the interim rate refund to EITE surcharge eligible customers will be reduced to the extent possible to provide for the full recovery of that amount. To the extent any portion of that amount is not recovered through a reduction to the interim rate refund, the company may recover the remaining portion through the surcharge mechanism. In other words, the pot of money that was available for interim rates was going to be reduced first to the EITE paying customers and have their refund reduced. That is what the commission ordered in the initial order. The commission changed its mind, violated procedural law in doing so, and our position violated substantive law.
Well, the commission says in its brief that you have not demonstrated that a single dollar of the EITE cost was ever surcharged or collected from your clients.
Your Honor, that's simply untrue. There is money that has been paid into the interim rate. Let's call it an interim rate pot, okay? Approximately $13.9 million of the refund that our customers were entitled to was diverted to pay the cost of the ID credit. And so where the commission says that that LPI paid 54.7% of the interim rates and received 54.7% of the interim rate refund, that's an unlawful comparison. What we're arguing about here is that that the large power interveners were entitled to 54.7% of $65 million, not 54.7% of $40 million, roughly. So where I'd like to sort of focus the court's attention, if I may, is LPI's reply brief, pages 19 and 20, where we have tables 1 and 2. The unlawful change to the interim rates, and where it's clear that our dollars have been taken, is seen in the comparison between these two tables. So if I look at table 1 on page 19, line 7, shows that the commission allowed interim rates at $0. In other words, the final rates during the years 2017 and 2018 were $0 for purposes of the interim rate refund calculation. This must be the calculation because, as noted by the commission in its own order, on addendum page 89, KTAC revenues can only be counted once, and on the subsequent page, addendum page 90, those revenues have already been accounted for, the commission's language, in interim rates. Now, turn the page. The revised interim rate refund plan order is reflected in table 2. Compare again line 7 from table 1 to line 7 on table 2. Line 7 on table 2 artificially inflates the commission allowed interim rates from $0 to $12.6 million in 2017 and $0 to $11.9 million in 2018. This change could not have been effectuated without retroactively changing interim rates.
So you would agree that the primary issue for us is whether the particular accounting methodology proposed by the commission, by the Attorney General's office, and then adopted by the commission comports with Minnesota statute.
This is not an accounting methodology. This is a refund calculation that is set forth in statute. It is set forth in the commission's policy on interim rates established in 1982 as interpreted by the inner city gas case, and it's been in existence for decades.
I understand what happened here, and correct me if I'm wrong, because we've had these two tracks going with lots of crossover, it would appear, but it appears that the commission was presented with an EITE tracker account balance that accrued during the pendency of its general rate case.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And so then the commission's decision to allow, as an accounting exercise, in my view only, that the EITE tracker account balance would be recovered through available interim rate refund amounts.
That is what the commission did, and that would what the commission did in its initial order would not violate either retroactive, the retroactive rate doctrine or the EITE statute.
So then, when I read the statutes, 216B.16 and 216B.1696, I don't see that there's anything in that statutory language that prohibits what the commission decided to do. And so I have the statutes in front of me.
And, Your Honor, if I may, subdivision 3B of 216B.16 specifies that absent exigent circumstances, there can be no change to rate design in interim rates. Subdivision.
Okay. So I'm on subdivision 3, you said?
3B.
3B, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And there's a statutory formula in setting interim rates.
So was the decision by one of your clients after, like within a week of the initial rate determination, because of this new statute, EITE, as I understand it, I'm speaking about KTAC, to resume or start up operations, is that an exigent circumstance?
So, Your Honor, the commission has to actually find exigent circumstances to modify interim rates. So they have to make a finding on the record, and they did not. And to make sure that I drill home the point that interim rates are not just the random placeholder, this, Your Honors, is a petition for interim rates. There are hundreds of pages of financial schedules that go into how interim rates are set because they are set by formula. And the revenues, the KTAC revenues that came online that forced Minnesota Power to come down in its interim rate request were all accounted for as part of the interim rate calculation. And that's what the commission has said, and that's why these rates aren't set just as a placeholder. Now, if exigent circumstances were found, which they were not, then there can be modifications, and there was a Minnesota Power case from their appeal from their 2009 rate case in which the commission actually did that. That didn't happen here, so that's not at issue. What is at issue is 216.16, subdivisions 3 and 5, which say that rate design changes have to be prospective. Minnesota statute 216B.23, which also requires that all rates, necessarily includes the rate design thereof, has to be set prospectively. And those provisions have been interpreted by this court in the Inner City Gas case, 358 Northwest 2nd, 692, to mean that there cannot be a retroactive change to interim rates. So, and what happened here, and what we've demonstrated through tables 1 and 2, is that there was a retroactive change. There can, if the commission sets orders.
Just to clarify, because the income of KeyTac had already been
accounted for.
Accounted for.
Yeah, as the commission acknowledged. That's their language. It's not ours. We're
so
not arguing
point being
about
it's
it.
It's not the methodology that your client is contesting, but its application inconsistent with the statute, the result, in other words.
In other words, yes, whether they exceeded their authority, a question that is de novo before this court. And I see my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you have the first 10 minutes of the 15. Make sure to identify yourself again for the record, if you would, please.
My name is Jeff Bowman. I represent the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. May it please the court. This is the fourth appeal arising out of Minnesota, out of the Commission's energy-intensive trade-exposed docket, which I'll refer to as the ID docket, and the Commission and the Minnesota Power's general rate case filed in 2016. Two prior appeals have been dismissed by this court, and recently, in case number A18-1029, this court affirmed the Commission's decision setting final rates, finding that the Commission's decision was reasonable and in conformity with the plain language of the ID statute found at 216B1696.
Do you agree that you conceded in your brief that the November 28, 2018 order substantially changed the March 12th order?
No, Your Honor. We didn't concede that it changed. It didn't change the methodology. It changed the actual numbers, and that's a key distinction. So if you look at the initial order, what it required, consistent with the orders out of the other ID docket, and it said that KeyTac revenues need to be used to offset the ID costs. That was the commission's interpretation of the ID statute in the April 20th, 2017 order in the ID docket. The idea being that if this discount given to LPI members actually spurred production and resulted in increased revenues, those revenues first need to be used to offset the cost of the discount. And that is the interpretation of the ID statute confirmed by this court in A18-1029. So the initial order required both that KeyTac revenues be used to offset costs, and then when it came to the interim rate refund.
When you say initial order, you're talking about the April 13th, 2017 order.
No, Your Honor. So when I'm talking.
I want to make sure which order we're talking
about. Absolutely. So the April 20th, 2017 order contains the Commission's interpretation of the ID statute. How do increased revenues need to be accounted for? And it clearly says they need to be accounted for in an ID tracker account. So both ID costs and the ID revenues need to be tracked in this account and offset. You go to the initial order, which is the March 12th order setting final rates, which also lays out the initial interim rate refund plan requiring a compliance filing to be reviewed by the parties. And so looking at that March 12th initial order, what it required is that KeyTac revenues be used to offset costs. And then, because Minnesota Power had represented that during the interim rate period, this deficit had accrued in the tracker balance, it allowed Minnesota Power to collect the ID costs not offset by revenue increases, and that's the key. So Minnesota Power filed a compliance filing as directed by the commission. The parties commented on it as allowed by the commission in the initial order. And at that time, it came to the attention of the commission that Minnesota Power had not been tracking the increased ID revenues in the ID tracker account as required by the April 20th, 2017 order and required by the March 12th initial order that also required that result. So at that time, though as laid out in the OAG comments, the methodology remains the same. Minnesota Power is allowed to collect from the interim rate refund ID costs not offset by revenue increases. But when you actually track the ID revenues in the tracker account, there's simply nothing to offset. The tracker balance is zero, and there is no reason to then go to the non-ID customers, the residential customers, and decrease their interim rate refund to collect a cost that has already been offset by the ID revenues, which is the result mandated by the ID statute. And again, that is the commission's interpretation that was upheld by this court in A18-1029.
So what's wrong with the, I'm looking at the gray brief, the reply brief, pages 19 and 20, the charts. What's wrong in your view with those charts?
So, Your Honor, the main thing that's wrong with this is if you look at line item 5, the adjustment for ID revenues. Minnesota Power added back into base rates $15.5 million of key TAC revenues. So counsel for LPI, during his initial oral argument, kept referencing that line 7, the interim rate collection allowed, is $0. What they have done is they've manipulated the accounting to create an artificial rate decrease, but only during the interim rate period. Therefore, saying that Minnesota Power overcollected the entirety of the $61 million and it needs to be refunded. They need to collect from that refund the ID costs and then refund 86% to their customers. The problem with this is that the commission never ordered a rate decrease. The commission ordered a rate increase of $12 million. So this is all artificial. There was no rate decrease. What the commission order does is apply the straightforward application of both the ID statute and the interim rate refund statute. So when we talk about interim rates being accounted for, what we mean is they were considered in setting interim rates. There's a statutory formula that we apply at the beginning of the case that allows the company rate relief while we actually consider their requested rate increase. That doesn't mean, as apparently advocated by LPI, that those funds aren't available. During the interim rate period, KeyTac is purchasing energy. They're purchasing energy at an increased rate based on this statutory formula. But those revenues exist. They're being paid to Minnesota Power. And per the clear terms of the ID statute, they need to be used first to offset the cost of the ID discount. So this idea that the ID revenues were accounted for and somehow don't exist is frankly a matter of semantics, but their idea that it doesn't exist is simply wrong. When the commission talks about accounting, we mean it was considered, we set interim rates, and to be clear, that interim rate was never changed. Rate design was never changed. Whether or not those were included in the final determination, that's the whole purpose of a rate case. We look at their asserted costs and their asserted revenues, what's going to be included, what's not going to be included, and we set final rates after a year-long process of testimony and contested case proceeding. The fact that any particular revenue or cost was accounted for initially has no bearing on whether it is accounted for in final rates.
So I just want to make sure. So when I read your briefs, when you say counting, you're not talking about what I think of as accounting with financial statements and that sort of thing. You're talking about accounting as taking into consideration.
Correct. When we have an interim rate formula and it requires us to put certain inputs into it. It's in 216B16 subdivision 3. One of those is the revenues of the company. They were, or projected revenues. They were accounted for. They requested an interim rate decrease. Ultimately, the commission ordered a rate increase, but less than the interim rate that were set. And then the commission ordered a pro rata across the board refund of all the revenues. And that's the exact result called for in the interstate gas case cited by opposing counsel. So this idea that it really comes down to this idea that the money's available. And the ID statute requires that those funds be used to offset the cost of the discount. That wasn't done in Minnesota Power's initial plan. Therefore, it didn't comply with either the commission's orders in the ID docket or the commission's initial order in the rate case. The commission had authority to then consider the comments of the OAG and modify the calculations, modify the plan, so that it was consistent with both the ID statute and its initial order. The commission was not seeking to undo the entirety of its ID docket in its interim rate refund plan, which was always subject to a compliance filing, which was always subject to the review of the parties.
So do you think that this court's opinion that we filed in May has any bearing on this case?
Yes, Your Honor. At least as to the third issue dealing with whether or not this is violative of the ID statute, the commission's interpretation of the ID statute is the same. We're applying it to a different time period. We're applying it to different monies, but the interpretation is the same. ID revenues, increased ID revenues, and KTAC is all increased ID revenues, need to be used to offset costs. And that's true during the final rate period as held in this court's May opinion, and it's also true during this interim rate period. See him out of time, Your Honors, and for those reasons, I'd ask you to affirm the decision of the commission. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And we have 5 additional minutes for responding to. And again, if you want to identify yourself for the record, we appreciate that.
Good morning, Your Honors. David Moeller on behalf of Minnesota Power. May it please the court. During the evolution of these two dockets, Minnesota Power has proposed methodologies as we work to implement the energy policy of the state of Minnesota through the EIT statute and provide competitive rates for our large industrial customers in northern Minnesota. These methodologies have not always been fully adopted by the commission as they work through the different dockets and different orders. However, what was ultimately approved by the commission in its March 2018 retail rate case order and in the interim rate refund order that is subject to this appeal has provided Minnesota Power the financial assurance that the utility was not harmed in refunding interim rates. Therefore, the company agrees with the commission that the interim rate refund order should be upheld by this court and that other issues are not before this court. As this court stated in the case number 18-1029 that's been referenced already, it, quote, if there is room for two opinions on a matter, the commission decision is not arbitrary and capricious, even though the court may believe that an erroneous decision was reached. While this court's decision in the May appeal does not necessarily bind the court for this docket, there is no legal reason for applying a different standard of review in this case. The court's review of the commission's orders and the interpretation of the EIT and the interim rate statute should be applied to the same standard of arbitrary and capricious. This is also especially true given the rate design and revenue requirement decisions made by the commission and Minnesota Power's rate case, and is consistent with this court's decision in the Excelsior Energy case and other applicable law. The commission fully considered the interplay between EITE and the interim rate statute and interim rate orders, as well as the proposed methodologies by the company, by the Office of the Attorney General, and the comments of other parties, and reached a decision wholly within the commission's authority. Turning to the $7.3 million windfall issue, as described by LPI, Minnesota Power fully agrees with the commission that there is no basis for overturning the decision below. To the extent there even is an issue, it was decided by the commission's April 2017 EIT order regarding how any excess revenues from Minnesota Power providing the EIT discount would be accounted for, and the interim rate order does not change that outcome. The commission's April 2017 order stated, quote, refunds will be capped at the surcharge collected, unquote. Large Power is now asking for a refund that would exceed that cap. Furthermore, Large Power failed to request reconsideration of the April 2017 EIT order, and this appeal was dismissed by this court, and review was denied by the Minnesota Supreme Court. We also believe there's a lack of record evidence in this docket or in this case, since Large Power's reconsideration petition included an additional column in a table, not elsewhere in the record, alleging the $7.3 million windfall. Turning to the issue of retroactive rate making that was discussed earlier, Minnesota Power agrees with the commission that retroactive rate making is not applicable in this case because the interim rate statute, as it operates, is retroactive and is in accordance with Minnesota law. That's how it works. You go back and you determine what the rates were compared to what Minnesota Power. In this case, Minnesota Power requested an interim rate, reduced it because of the key tax revenues, but then the commission compared that to the final rates to determine what the refund amount was, and then implemented a refund in accordance with both its March 2018 order, as well as looking at the methodology applied by both Minnesota Power and the Office of Attorney General. So ultimately, this is a question of rate design for the commission, as the company charged different revenues for electric service and how to allocate those revenues to customers. And the commission has plenary authority over rate design. In conclusion, Minnesota Power respectfully requests that the court affirm the commission's decision and the court find that the commission and Minnesota Power correctly accounted for all interim rate refunds and EIT revenues consistent with Minnesota statutes 216B16 and 216B1696. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Moeller. And Mr. Maratska, it's your opportunity for a rebuttal. You have 5 minutes.
Your Honors, thank you. I'll make a few brief points. First, counsel for the commission conceded that there was a change, that they modified the calculations and they modified the interim rate refund plan. And as authority for that change, on page 25 of the commission's brief, they say they rely on 216B.25 to state the commission may at any time, upon notice, alter or amend a prior order. The provisions of 216B.25, the procedural rules associated therewith, were not complied with. This is beyond dispute. Second, that the April 20th, 2017 order somehow controls the decision here. It does not. It was not filed in the rate case docket. If that was the intent of the commission should have, at that time, either found exigent circumstances or done something else to adjust interim rates, because just 1 week prior, on April 13th, 2017, in the rate case docket, the commission made a subsequent downward adjustment to account for key tax revenues. So the commission was well aware of where interim rates were set vis-a-vis key tax revenues and apparently the order that it is now asserting well after the fact that somehow controls the decision here. We respectfully disagree. Third, that the ID statute somehow requires this decision. Make clear that the A18-1029 decision doesn't control here. That case dealt with the prospective and simultaneous treatment of revenues and surcharges, which the court found satisfied the ID statute. Here, there are no simultaneous surcharges and revenues.
In that opinion, the standard of review was arbitrary and capricious, and you're urging us to apply a de novo review?
That is correct, Your Honor. The issues are different from that case to this case, and quite simply, the standard of review is different. Again, we're not in that case, we were dealing with the prospective application of the simultaneous balancing of surcharges and revenues. Here, there are no simultaneous surcharges and revenues. There is no surcharge revenue refund mechanism to implement. There are only actual dollars paid into the interim rate pot by low-income and ID customers that will be used to offset the ID tracker balance. That cannot be done under 216B.1696, subdivision 2D of the ID statute. It also would render superfluous, in violation of Wardnick, the policy statement that it is the energy policy of the state of Minnesota to ensure competitive electric rates to energy-intensive trade-exposed customers. We're giving them a credit, and then we're taking it away. That cannot be consistent with the energy policy of the state, and this court must give that policy statement meaning, not render it superfluous under Wardnick. Finally, Your Honor, just to be absolutely clear of the relief that we are seeking here. Number one, on issues 1 and 4, we argue for reversal. On issue 1, there is a violation of state law, and 2, there was no in issue 4, there was no discussion of the $7.3 million. The commission first discussed it in brief. The commission speaks through its orders, not through counsel. This court cannot provide reasoning that the commission itself failed to provide. So reversal of issues 1 and 4. On issues 2 and 3, we're requesting reverse and remand with direction to comply with the commission to comply with Minnesota Power's June 28th, 2018 compliance filing. Again, we're talking about an interim rate refund that should have been $65 million, and we should have received 54.7% of that $65 million. The commission's artificial accounting shrunk that to $40 million. And while Minnesota Power was held whole, that is not the only way to violate the EITE statute. The EITE statute can also be violated if EITE and low-income customers are required to pay the cost of the surcharge. So while Minnesota Power may be whole, low-income and EITE customers are not. And with that, Your Honors, I rest.
Thank you to all counsel and to the briefing, and we especially appreciate your attempt as best as possible to provide concise answers to our questions in this voluminous file. We'll take the matter under advisement, be issuing a ruling. Have a good day to all of you.